Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And Leo. And tonight we have George Dixon joining us in a short while. We're going to discuss the... I think we're going to talk about the mine 6 night and 6 day, as well as current events that seem to be playing a rather chaotic scenario, if you will, between and what may be coming ahead, either more of a financial collapse or more of a hyperinflationary period, or a different aspects of this period. And let's talk to George here. He's with us now. Hello, George.
Yeah, good evening, Leo. Lila?
Yeah, I'm right here. Good evening, George. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. It's been a while here.
Yes, welcome back to the show.
Why, thank you.
We're glad you're back. We missed you, and I know the folks who are listening did too.
So, we had a nice talk with Peter Moon there the other night, and excuse me. And
the last time you were on, he was with us on the show.
Yeah, so he was. He's got some great information that he's coming out with, and it's good. I've always liked Peter Moon. I like his writing.
Yeah, no, he's a good writer. That series is very interesting. For those of you who aren't aware, that's the Mine, not the Mine, the Montauk series. But I thought we might concentrate a little bit more on some of the aspects that were touched in that Montauk project. But more so, I think we can start with a. We're going to talk a bit about the Mayan calendar and the 6 day and 6 night. And you had some concerns about what's happening now with current events and how they play into this scenario.
Into the cycle that we're in right now. We're in a 6 day cycle. And what I was noting concern with, I think in the shifting, in November now, we will shift from the day period to the night period. And going back in previous cycles, that is where you have a lot of disease or harder times. It's the crisis time. And like we've been experiencing now, with the fifth day and the fifth night, it's understanding the polarity in our nature and the experiences that we had. Now it's using what knowledge we've obtained and putting it into focus. And that's what we've been experiencing for the last year. And it's a time for the ending of events, of cycles. And right now, what it is closing off one cycle and a new one's to start. Part of understanding the economic problems that we've been having, what's happening now is that the system is actually breaking down and it's dissipating. And from this, a new system will come. But this falling down and going through this crisis period is what the sixth night is going to be showing us.
There's a lot of static on your end there, George. Is something... Oh, okay. It kind of stopped.
Okay.
No, that's okay. I was thinking, with the... with the rise and fall era in the 10th and the 6th night, 6th day, the 6th day ends in November, correct, of this year?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, the 6th night will go probably, what, from November to November of 2010?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, so that's the 6th night. So will we be entering the 7th day? Is that correct? Yeah, the seventh day will begin toward the end of 2:10.
2:10, right, to 2:11.
2:11.
Right. And 2:11 is where we can complete it.
That would be like October 28th, 2011, I guess, right?
Right, yes.
So we must be entering, we will be entering that seventh day. I'm confused now. So
let's just stick with where we are right now at this point. But it's really the completing the three-dimensional reality through the polarity consciousness. And now we're raising up the awareness, multi-levels, where we're going into more of the subconscious or the real time zone.
Well,
now, this is more the imaginary time zone.
Okay. And now, will we be experiencing that at all this coming year in the sixth night?
Well, I think that's what we've been, some of us have been experiencing. I mentioned, you know, waking dreams.
Okay.
And being able to to identify with dreams and control dreams, and understanding the fourth dimension is a dream state, where we would be conscious of our movements in a fourth state reality. It's
right.
Like astral traveling.
Okay. All right. So essentially, that's what we're going to be looking at soon.
I think that's what people are experiencing now with these impulses, are seeing these flashes of reality they're not used to. And what's happening is this subconscious insight is opening up, where people are experiencing the other aspects of our soul, of our nature.
You think that is everybody experiencing this, or is it select? I'm just thinking that.
Everybody is experiencing basically the same thing in one form or another.
Right.
But not everybody is aware of what they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's true?
I think now they're starting to see it because they see how their motivations or their attention is actually directing more of what they're experiencing.
Right.
It's like deja vu because now I think they see that they have some control in what they're experiencing, the reality they're experiencing. And, you know, that's just a tip of the iceberg. And I've talked before that what we're experiencing is that we are drawing to ourselves our own reality. We are manifesting that reality in a world that we live in.
I think that, I think it's true, and I think we're starting to see this coming to the surface more, are the emotional rawness of people coming to the surface with the recent racist statements there that seem to be, this movement, this conservative movement that seems to be spawning a great deal of racial tension.
Well, they haven't said anything racist. What they're doing is,
no,
their emotions are propelling them forward to say things.
Lila. I was just listening to Rush Limbaugh today.
Well, I don't count him as.
Well,
either.
No, this is. All right, now, and he's like the cutting edge of this thing, the Glenn Becks and all this kind of thing. Now, these guys are perpetuating this racial thing. Now, Limbaugh. He had a caller on there, and Limbaugh totally agreed with him. The guy said, "Geez, where's Lee Harvey Oswald when you need him?" All right.
Oh, that's a terrible thing.
Things like this.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, this
horrid.
Is the kind of stuff that's coming to the forefront now, And I mean, Glenn Beck, you know, I don't know if you know who he is, but Glenn Beck said Obama was a racist and Obama hated white people and all this kind of stuff. So what's going on is there's a an incendiary.
Consider them the fringe.
They are, but they're the ones that they're not. They're really not. Okay, that's probably 50% of the population of the United States. Okay, are involved with this, and possibly more. All right, but there's definitely a raw emotion that's coming out of these people. I mean, it was somewhat there with Bush. Bush brought this thing out during the last 8 or 10 years, but now it's this hatred is more of a seething anger against and is focused against again liberals, if you will, all right, or focused against people of conscience, all right. So these people that are out there, there are some serious crazy bastards out there, George. You know?
All right, Leo, let's, you know, I don't know where you could take this, but your point has been made. So what?
Well, what do you mean, so what?
Huh?
What do you mean, so what?
So
I mean,
what? This is what's happening. This is what's involved with it. So what? What do you want to do with it now that you've found that or this is clear to you? Where do you want to take it?
No, all I'm saying is that this is part and parcel of this. Of what we're dealing with now in the sixth night, coming into the sixth night or sixth day, is this rawness of emotion, this raw, you know, I think all the facades, all the masks are falling down, and, you know, the teeth and the animals and everything are showing themselves for what they are. I don't mean that just on the end of the spectrum. I mean in all ends of the spectrum. So. Yep. You know, if that's the case, then what's going to happen is you're going to see a true eruption and conflagration of revolutionary conflagration. All right.
Maybe that's true, but what you're saying is right. The illusion of that what you're viewing is one illusion to begin with, because there is manipulation. But the illusion is being exposed for what it is.
That's right. No, it is, definitely. But, it, you know, only to certain people.
No, no. There's no but in there. it is no but in there. It does.
It does what?
It affects everybody.
Yeah, it affects everybody. But what I'm saying is that you know, the rise in emotion as the walls fall, as the masks are taken off, all right, and we're looking at each other naked, all right, then now we see who we are, we see where we're at, and if there's no and I don't think in a lot of these cases there's much compromise that will be just don't compromise.
The biggest mask that's coming off is the mask on the United States.
Yes, without a doubt. Mm-hmm.
And that mask, it's both tragic and not. Tragic because I think the American people have been fooled about what we are, and good in a way because maybe we'll stop trying to build dynasties in other people's property.
Well, yeah,
you know,
and stop invading
countries and hurting people.
No,
and I think what we are as a country is being revealed to us.
Well, I heard the other day that this guy.
I agree with you, Lila. I agree with you.
But
we've become very greedy, very greedy people.
Well,
we live is very greedy.
Yeah.
I've written about this. Years ago, and on my blog and stuff, and talked about it constantly. But this is a country that was founded on slavery and founded on genocide. Okay.
Well, yes, but that may be right, Leo. But you know, we have the choice now that we see it for what it is, and with the illusion being lifted, we're seeing it for what it is.
Yeah.
And I think the outcome of this is going to be what we're going to do individually to alter it, if we do alter it. You see it for what it is and change our way of life and how much we attach ourselves to it. You know, we have the choice, but if nothing else, we're seeing it for what it is, for the reality behind it.
And we'll have the choice to try to overcome it individually, because, and maybe as we do individually, we'll come together as a group.
Well, I agree with that. But if nothing else, it's part of that unity consciousness
right. That
the Mayans talk about, that we're part of this period right now we're experiencing is that unity consciousness of reuniting with the whole again.
And that would be a wonderful thing. You sparked a question in my mind in your opening statement. You said going into the sixth night.
Yes.
Hey there, doggy. Going into the sixth night brings things like these and sometimes things begin to fall apart. Well, it sort of sparked in my mind, are we talking about the flu pandemic really coming to a head at that time?
Yes.
But we're certainly going in that direction, aren't we?
Yes, without a doubt. And it's the biggest scare, I think, right now for this fall, you know, with these vaccines that are going they're going to have available. But, you know, I can go back, I think, a year and a half or so, when I start seeing things on the internet, or small bits and pieces building up for this, and it's just scary. But Lila, you know, I'm more concerned with the sixth night. Is that if you go back through history and so forth, there is a dark side of us, and all that dark side that we put energies and motion into are going to manifesting itself. And, you know, you can even talk about, you know, the return of our Christian Christ, but also the return of the Antichrist. And everything that has been out there for years, it's got to come to filtration. And that basically is what's going to be happening. And that's good and bad. So, you know, whatever you believe is going to manifest, and understand that other people have other views of their manifestations. And they're not to our liking or to your liking. So understand that we're going to be experiencing that.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a very interesting and perhaps tumultuous time that we're coming up to again.
Yes, but you know, it's very simple though. If you look at it, you know, from an impersonal point of view. And as to a unity consciousness where, you know, it's not that you take sides with it or its way, either good or bad. It's that you do acknowledge it for being what it is. And that doesn't mean that you have to join or to be part of it other than you acknowledge it. But in acknowledging it, you just acknowledge the fact that it's part of the unity that you share together.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that... You vibrate on the same level with it, other than if nothing else, you can identify with it and go on without having to challenge it.
Well, I'm hoping that I'm joined in unity with some positive things.
Well, yeah. And some of the negative things too.
I just as soon skip that part of it, the negative part.
Well, you never know. It's maybe some of those negative views you've had of life or of things in your life over the years that you haven't really thought about. But, you know, it's now re-looking at a lot of these things and the reason why you do things the way you do and you live the way you do. Things are changing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a child learning all over again. And here we're learning in a different world, a different reality than what we originally learned when we originally were born.
Well, that should be quite a challenge.
Yeah. It just so happens now that not only the imagination or the thought of it is manifesting itself, but the reality is manifesting, and we have no control over it. And for some reason, it's the energy that we have is manifesting whatever you put in motion. So not only us, myself, but also the other living things of this earth, too. Remember, we're not separated or higher than they are. They are a form of intelligence, the same intelligence we hooked into, but their world is a little bit different than ours.
It's funny. I was just going to say, when you spoke that we're all so interconnected that, you know, it's not only our own vision, but it's those of what we're connected to that counts, too.
Yeah. They call it air and water and food. Yeah. It's as simple as that.
Yep. Theo, I've been typing something here. I'm not quite sure what you're doing.
Just to anybody who joins us, I'm on the chat room here. I'm just trying to bring people up to date on what we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
So what I was curious about, George, and I can't really seem to...
Is your mind around it?
Well, I read something today that I wasn't aware of, is that the cross is...
The symbol of the cross?
The symbol of the cross is a symbol of time and space.
How so?
That's
okay.
I got it from the Montauk book there, Montauck Revisited, Peter Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And ancient, it's the cross, he states, has always stood for... known through it's a symbol of time and space.
Yes, right.
But I mean that's okay. But I don't understand, like, the intersection of time and space. What is that? Like the cross, the intersection of the cross.
That's now, isn't it? The time and space when it intersects.
Is that now?
It's,
or is that when is what is that?
Is that
what
right
is that,
now?
What does that stand for? Iconically, that this the center of the cross.
can I ask the reason why you asked this question? Does it matter?
Is essentially that in 2012 is supposed to, or 2011 is supposed to be the end of space and time as we know it.
Yes.
It stops. So, but I read this today. As I was reading that second book, the Montauk Revisited, and Peter Moon said that the cross was actually a symbol of time and space,
mm-hmm.
and it was also important. I mean, as far as the time, I'm trying to, I can't quote the whole phrase or even the chapter. But that stuck in my mind only because I never really thought, I never knew that. I know, you know, through all the things I ever read, I never knew that the cross stood for time and space. I always thought it was a symbol of the of total power. It was a symbol of power.
Well, it is both of those things, you know. But it's a product of time. It's a product of space. The whole cross.
Right.
So you have different symbolisms using the cross. You know, the center point does have some references, you know, to certain belief systems, but it's the whole cross itself which reflect not only the two dimensions, but also three dimensions: up, down, left, right.
Mm. I see what you're saying. Okay. I don't know where I was.
The Montauk series, that is a product of time itself.
Right.
Yeah, there are some things, of course, when Leo reads that, he always feels a little bit disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
The things in those books that are, you know, that do jog your mind a bit.
Well, yeah, they do.
So, and one of the things I wanted we might talk about that I want well, part of what I was leading up to, I guess, in a very very broad way, was control.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it goes quite into that. Now, he talks about the 12. Now, this is fascinating. In that book, he brings up the 12 different schools.
Well,
right?
Repeat for the listeners who it is that wrote the book. And
okay.
And Preston Nichols, but Peter Moon essentially was that one.
Right, the book you're referring to is Music and Time?
No, Revisited.
Montauk Revisited, okay.
And Montauk Revisited was where he talks about this, but he also talks about the, space and time, he talks about the Monarch Project, he talks about the time travel aspect of it, but he gets involved a lot with the Crowley influences and stuff, but and synchronicities of the different meetings and the different places and the different people that seem to have come together to create this that we're all somehow connected to this, to the Montauk Project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one of the, I guess what I'm getting at is that if with this book, they have traveled through time and through distant time, you know, and they,
who
is
they?
People.
Oh.
Okay, and people who invented this time warp stuff.
Yes.
And they even have time police they're talking about. They've even installed time police with people.
What's that?
People that prevent people from going through time and screwing time up, you know, screwing things up. So, but...
Just like Hollywood.
but more so, I guess what I was getting at was he talks a lot about the Illuminati in there and the 12 schools, the different 12 schools, and he says there's 12 schools that essentially that that have white magic and black magic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're constantly contouring each other. He said there's some very noble esoteric schools, and there's some very dark ones.
Yes.
But they more or less
like Harry Potter.
But they,
yeah.
Know,
mm-hmm.
They control the balance of the universe, or the balance of the earth, the balance of the world. And where? But if we 2012. Is the end of space time as we know it, then it should dissolve these esoteric, or not esoteric, but these controlling organizations that
yes.
control
mm-hmm.
the world.
Right.
These will be ended. And,
yes.
And
you don't think their vision will be fulfilled for themselves?
No. I'm saying, no. What I'm saying is that whatever, I don't care what their vision is, it'll end, okay? Everyone's vision will end of that, you know, whatever we think it is in the third dimensional reality we exist in. But what I'm saying is that, though he mentions this in here, you have people that are trying to control us, constantly control humanity to think in certain ways and do certain things, and, you know, and that is about to break. That's about to. We've already mentioned that the masks are falling.
Yes.
But the pressure of these groups is becoming greater and greater and greater. And you can see it in the mass media. You can see it in the movies. You can see it in the in the books. You can see it in the mainstream news. You can see it happening where they're trying to infuse more and more and more fear, confusion. Division, just chaos. Okay, they're trying to create this emotional chaos within the individual, and by doing so, they can control them, totally control them.
But how long can they do that, Leo?
I don't know. But I'm thinking that they're trying like hell. But I'm thinking that by October 28, 2011. All right, that control will no longer be there. Okay, And and it's just, but I'm believing that if they are in their little time machines and they have actually seen beyond that, okay, it's like if you look at what Al Bielek said,
yes.
2795 or whatever it was, and there was only half a million people on the Earth, all right?
What he saw wasn't anything that we could look
forward
to.
That we want to look forward to, right.
But who's to say that he actually viewed this reality? Because he was sent down a wormhole or a time hole.
Right.
And one stop, I think, was 2146.
Right.
But who's to say that that's the same string of time that we're following right now?
Oh, that's true. That's true.
And of course,
he could have been on any of the.
And of course, that might have been his reality.
That could have been too.
Maybe that's not our vision.
Well, there are different realities into that, and I think the Bible code is just one example of the Torah itself, the first five books of Moses.
Oh, say a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Well, that has a time cycle within itself. Everything that we have experienced is written in the Torah. And everything between the time they first started the record until the 28th century. Up in the 28th century is where the ending of that time zone was completed. And who's to say that that time zone is not 2012 in this time zone? But anyways, the Bible code talks about the experiences and the times that we are to experience between now and the end of their time, which is the 28th century. So that's just another view of time and of reality. But it's the string that was followed, and here the string from the Hebrew Torah is just one example, and some of the stories from the Montauk is another example.
Interesting, huh?
Sure.
It's an interesting way to think of it, isn't it?
There was something that was mentioned in this book about the 20-year biorhythmic.
Yes.
Movement, a 10-year and a 20-year.
Mm-hmm.
And in that period, this was involving the string theory there, but I believe that time folds on itself.
I don't understand that.
Time actually folds on itself and creates these strings.
Do you understand that, George?
Somewhat, yes.
I don't understand that, I have to confess.
I was following it there for a while, and then I kind of
lost it.
Well, yeah, because it had to do with time folding, like a wave going around and then time folding and creating this string. I totally freaking lost me. But again, what I'm thinking is, I mean, all of this stuff is pure nothing.
It's
after
speculation.
Not so much speculation, but it means absolutely nothing after 2012.
Remember when you said string, you followed it by the word theory. It's not a fact. It's a theory. It's not been proven.
Well, I understand that, but what I'm saying is this happens to be one of the.
Yeah, I don't know what they mean by
what separates a fact from a theory.
Well, you can, for instance, I'm sitting right here, right?
Yes.
And
in whatever dimension.
Right, in this dimension, I can prove that I'm here. Leo is here to verify that, and that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
I have evidence and.
Yeah, you have some empirical evidence, scientific evidence, or empirical evidence saying that this is here. But
a theory is a man's best guess,
yeah.
Unsupported by real evidence.
All right, so let's jump to supported evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And that is with David Anderson's work with time.
Okay.
And apparently he has a procedure that he could follow that he can slow down the movements of time.
Yeah, I heard that.
That
yes.
So sunrise there.
This is no longer a theory. It's a fact.
Okay.
So what other strings of time can we connect with this that, you know, we could speculate, but for all intents and purposes, it's a fact. Whatever aspects of it you want to challenge, you can't because it's been proven. It's just a flavoring you connect with it, just like with quantum theories. You know, it's it has its own path.
Yeah, I have to confess, I don't really understand very much of it.
I think we all understand the possibility of traveling through time. You know, of going up and back and around and wherever. But
I read a lot about it in fiction.
Well, like for instance, in the Montauk project, right? The Montauk Revisited. I think today, and it said that, like Preston, for instance, Preston Nichols, who was co-author of a lot of most of these books, he was actually a picture of him was taken in 1818 or something like that with the founding of the first electric company, the first electrical impulse company or something.
Power
EIT.
Company.
Yes. Okay.
EIT and with the Wilson family and the Crowley family and all this stuff together.
Yes.
And there was actually a picture of him.
Of Preston?
Yeah. That was taken in 1818. Which is when all the founders of that guy was, you know, Preston. But it's Preston more or less like older than he was at the time when they wrote the book, which was like 1992 or 93.
Yeah.
But there was actually this picture, and it showed that Preston actually time traveled, okay, to that time, all right, and. Was surprising to Preston. He didn't know about it, okay? Of course, he wouldn't know about it because it was after that period. He probably knows about it now.
Well, this can get a bit confusing here. Understanding that we're jumping more into past lives, and that basically is following the different lives of Preston before he was incarnated in this life.
Well, that could be, or that he was, I mean, there was a truly advanced knowledge there.
Mm-hmm.
Who got
transferred back to that time period.
Wait, mm-hmm. Who had the picture, and how did he get it?
It came out of an archive or something, of the company archives.
Huh.
He found it, and it was brought up, and Peter saw it, Peter Moon saw it and it was shown to him.
Now, George, do you think he actually went on a time travel mission or that it was more reincarnation?
Both.
Oh, that's the coward's way out, George.
I do believe he's pulling from information from his relationship, let's say, to Duncan Cameron in a past life,
right.
Which is the life preceding this one, where they identified with the Wilson brothers.
Yeah, that's what that's what they were talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, there's other people now who talk about walk-ins, and actually this is what we're dealing with a walk-in generation. Edgar Cayce, I believe, talked about some of these walk-ins.
What is that, George, a walk-in?
Well, a walk-in is where a person gives up his body and another soul enters the body and continues the body.
Now, this happened with supposedly happened with Melchizedek.
Well, Drumbelo was one, one individual.
Walking, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Duncan also was a walk-in, and he was another one with the Montauk Project.
I think the craziest part of that whole book was how he was transferred to the year 2000 or something, or to the beginning to the time of Christ.
Uh-huh.
And his instructions were to kill him, to kill Christ, as well as to get some of his blood. Now, when he got there, when he got to that period, he met Christ. Christ willingly gave him some of his blood,
mm-hmm.
But told him he couldn't kill him yet. All right, and then he was transferred, Christ, but. Cameron was transported back to, I believe it was Montauk, and he said, but he refused to give up the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So he was then transported to Mars, all right, the planet Mars, where he met Christ, or somebody who looked like Christ, and gave him
the vial of blood.
The vial, right?
Uh-huh.
And that it turned out to be not Christ. Turned out to be somebody else. But anyway, they that's how they got it from him. But it turned him around, according to what it said. It turned Cameron around from this robotic.
Right. Okay. His evil ways.
He found his soul. All right.
Uh-huh.
Through the blood, he actually found his soul.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A different person, and that was a turning point. But this was all through these time portals that he went back and forth through, and you know, it's a completely and unbelievably bizarre story. But and nevertheless, it is fascinating in itself that. That they were trying to create the Antichrist.
Uh-huh.
That Montauk was trying to create the Antichrist, and what they actually did is create a beast. Okay, which there was somebody had actually taken a picture of it, and that was the end of the Montauk actually series because they scared the hell out of everybody. And
well, what happened to that thing they created?
As far as I know, either they pushed it into time or they destroyed it. There was I think I have to go to the next book to find out what happened there. But
do you know what happened, George? Yeah. You read all those books.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's they're just like it was.
It's still
and thank you, Leo, for keeping it alive because it's living now just like it has been for years. Because you keep it alive.
Oh. Well, I don't keep it. I just brought it up.
Yeah, I know. But see, when you brought it up, you kept it alive.
Oh.
Think about it. Yeah, you know, it's funny. By the way, I seen Duncan Cameron, about a month ago.
Oh, you did?
And him and I keep in touch. You know, it was great. We were able to see each other eye to eye. But he's doing great. And, you know, from time to time... Duncan and I talk, but you know, on the experiences of going in and out of those tunnels and to the extent of the tunnels that he went into, we don't talk too much about that.
No.
And no, the reason why is because, you know, I don't think he would really want to tell me, unless I wanted to hear it, but I would have no need to do that.
Do you think some things are better unsaid?
Yeah, I guess so. But I think he understands the connectiveness with the consciousness and it's anyways.
Hmm. Well, I'm glad he's alive and well. And if he's still interested in these kinds of things and time travel, and or is he completely retired from that, or is he writing, or what is he doing?
I believe he's dealing with energies, and I know he's very much involved with Reiki, and he's teamed up with some people, I think, from Toronto, and I know he does some energy work with them. But Duncan, he seems to be pretty active in, you know, in doing lecturing and giving workshops. So.
So is he into healing?
I believe so. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting that he's pursued that line.
Well,
it's a more positive way of living, I think.
I think it's healing more from a linear perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. You know, I didn't ask him. I didn't really, you know, probe and, you know, what he actually does or you know, how he does this, what he does. But Duncan, he's pretty knowledgeable when it comes to energies.
Well, when you heal others, you heal yourself too.
That's true. That's true. Uh-huh.
Maybe that's what it is. A little bit of both, but that's interesting. So, Leo, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about in that realm?
Yeah, somebody was on the line. They heard about the caves out there, and they say Teflon coat, I believe, is the...
The cage?
The caves.
The tunnels?
In Montauk.
Oh, yeah.
How does that relate to creating Homo Satanists? Because I mentioned they were conducting the whole Antichrist. They were trying to develop and create an Antichrist there, and try to actually, it was bizarre how they were actually trying to.
Why would you even want to?
And
do
actually,
that?
What is the Antichrist, anyway? I'm trying to get an understanding.
Well,
what do you think that is?
According to this book, okay, that I was talking about, which is Montauk Revisited.
By Peter.
Okay. Yeah, Aleister Crowley.
The Crowley.
Came about. He created the Antichrist to offset. He was trying to create it, or created the Antichrist to offset the repression of the Catholic of Catholicism. Okay.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, because he felt you know, and the Antichrist became anything that was against the dogma or against the powers of the Christian Church.
Okay.
Well, that's what I read. I mean, that's what he stated. But so anyway, an Antichrist is just an opposite of that Christ aspect, which seems to me to be the balancing act, if you will, of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Or the, you know, you have the Christhood. Or the
Christianity,
or the Christhood, you know, which is the, you know, perfect spiritual man, and then you have the Antichrist, which is the opposite of that, which was, you know,
person who
whatever
is bad or evil.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Antichrist could be very good at what they do, so they would be perfection, you know, in their perspective.
From the opposite, exactly, from the opposite. Well, you had mentioned to me the other day, we were talking about how the, you have to accept, you know, you have to, one negates the other, and if you're looking at things, you have to see the whole. Like, in other words, you have north and south, east and west, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which creates the total area, the total thing. And this is the same thing. You have a Christ and you have an Antichrist, but you know, and you know, that.
Well, it's acknowledging them both instead of having to have to defend one against the other, because
right.
That would be useless. Because one is just as equal as the other one.
Right. And but it's bringing about the Antichrist. That whole thing was kind of bizarre. And always has been, since...
Why this desire to bring forth a powerful figure that's not Christ and works against him has been around forever.
Yeah. But how they created anything like that or even wanted to create it, it'd be beyond me. If it already existed, you know what I mean?
Yes. Uh-huh. They just put a new name on it, that's all.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Very strange and weird.
Yeah. Teflon Coat says there's a finite and infinite, and there's two powers struggling or battling out there. And you're right. And the force is with us, you know? That's the other thing that's so bizarre about this series of works. Is how they get into the Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
and they talk about Wars, and they talk how these things were all these movies that Preston has specifically worked on, but how these were psychically dubbed. Okay, they were psychically dubbed. They actually had psychics on the
set.
Yeah, George Lucas on the set.
Mm-hmm.
And they were psychically enhancing this movie. Okay.
Yes.
And it was like it was extreme thoughts. But also his involvement with Mark Hamill, who was Luke Skywalker. But
yes.
Mark Hamill was more of a walk-in. It sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah. Because he not only was he a brilliant musician, but he went under many names, and he had, and he was, and how he got it, he was very much involved with the occult, and that's how he got involved with this movie, Star Wars, and Lucas's, invention there. So, but I mean, I'm telling people to go and read the book. That particular one, I think, is that Music and Time? Yeah, that might have been Music and Time that he talks mostly about that. Where am I going here? What I wanted to say is I want to wrap this up in a way that makes some kind of sense, that what we're dealing with now in a 2011 or 2012 sequence, where it's the end of time and space as we know it, this... You're saying that this may just be the end of a string.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Another way of looking at it, it's just like life in a box. What's happening is now we're getting glimpses of a box from the outside perspective instead of being inside the box.
Right.
Now the box itself is completing itself, and in that box is time. And everything as we understand three-dimensional reality to be. So what we're doing is we're just seeing it for what it is, and seeing it complete itself.
So that box actually won't be there anymore. It just disintegrate, and we become eternal.
Yeah.
Or infinite. I don't know what we're gonna see, but. We've become timeless and spaceless.
Well, yes, and also our energy field, energy field is going to be changed.
Right.
And for the longest time, I didn't realize that the Merkaba, the energy field we have around our body, is a property of the three dimensions.
Oh.
So we will drop that, our Merkaba field, as we... loses three-dimensional reality that we're locked into now, and that is more the Antichrist or the 666 that people are referring to. It's spirit connecting, with matter or with physical reality.
So
that is what we're coming out of.
Why have we been made to fear that?
Fear that?
Why have we been told to fear this merge?
For control.
For control, yeah. Huh? But you know, they can control us forever, but until that point, and then, you know, they can't control us at all.
We see that's the point now, that they're unable to control us completely.
Right.
And this is the external frustration that we feel inside, but subconsciously it's manifesting, and it's manifesting by the directions of where our government or our leaders take us. I mean, they take us there because we consciously are looking for that. And if nothing else, it's just to break away from this isolation that this reality of fear has put us into. And that is part of being closed off to the outside world.
Right. No, yeah, you're right. I understand that.
You know, Leo, what you were saying before, in the last couple of years, it was understanding life like the Mayans talked about as being a polarity-driven and experiencing the fifth day and the fifth night. It showed me that that is part of the choices that we have to make of not only accepting one or the other, but accepting both of them. And that way it's uniting that separation into a unity. And now it's with a unity consciousness, a unity understanding, that we can look to the sixth day, the light of the day, in changing the old system, which is falling apart. And that's what we're experiencing right now with what's going on in Washington and in the science community. And I think right now, the views and the understanding of where we want to take America and ourselves is being put into motion. But in order for it to go into motion, you know, it has to, we have to put to sleep, you know, the old way. And from the ashes, you know, comes the new experience.
But how do you explain this emergence of the new world order? You know, the one world currency,
it's falling apart before it's even started again. What are you talking about?
Okay.
And see, that's the problem. You can't keep fixing this thing because there's no fixing left on it. So, you know, you can do whatever you want to it, but it's going to do no good. What you got to do is just let it fall completely and pick it up after it falls and start all over again. And that's what we're doing right now, but it's all got to fall yet. And if nothing else, you know, I look at the market and what happens, you know, in the next couple of months to really show, you know, the destiny of 2010, because it's going to be a roller coaster year, no doubt about it.
Well, right now it's an expanding market.
Yeah, but take a look at the unemployment and take a look at the product goods, you know, that are available. There's also another side to this, too, that we are dependent now on foreign goods.
Okay.
And that's scary.
I've got to interrupt only because we've got about 1 minute left. I wanted to ask anybody who's out there who would like to join us or we're going to talk for a few more minutes. To please call if you have any questions, 646-915-9505. We got about 1 minute remaining, and I will take your call if you want to be on. If not, we will be happy to, you know, say goodnight to you. And please join us again next week. But we're going to be losing our feed in about 30 seconds here. So... George, what were you saying there?
I was reading the news about some of the businesses around the world, and there's a place off of Indonesia, I believe, that I think the British are reporting that it's become a graveyard of ships and boats, and apparently what they're doing is these boats are going there and are just being put in mothballs.
Yeah, I saw that. They're just sitting there,
yeah.
Because the recession is so bad, and they can't go anywhere. But I do know that we're up for that, and I think we're up for a huge, huge decline in the next in the next year, and I hope things get better. But I think we have to brace ourselves for the possibilities. And
possibilities of what?
of anything happening. We don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know what the possibilities will be, if they're going to be good, bad, or indifferent, you know, to us. And I think it'll be on individual levels. So I want to thank everybody before we lose the feed here, which I think we just did. Thank everybody for joining us. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where we're at, George. We really don't know yet. You know, we're...
Well, I don't know what Mother Nature has in store for us, but, you know, I think in just following the economy and the things in motion now, it's scary because, you know, even the local governments now are experiencing a part of the twang of things coming to the surface. You know, what comes around goes around, and it seems like all that stuff that's been below the surface is really coming to the top, and everybody's starting to point a finger.
I wanted to, before we end tonight, I just wanted to reference Peter Moon's books, the Montauk Project, Montauk's Revisited, and the whole series, and yet we were talking about tonight, referencing the Montauk Project, but in time travel. But you can get that, check that out at skybooks.com, I believe. And that's on the internet. You can look at these books or order them. A remarkable series of books. But anyway, George, it's over already.
Okay.
It's amazing what we can talk about on this show.
I know it. Exciting stuff.
I want to thank you, George, for being with us, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Okay.
And I want to thank everybody else who's joined us tonight or is listening to this in the archives. Please join us again next week.
And, George, give that dog a hug for us. We could hear him barking.
Yeah, Lola and Sammy. Was that Sammy or Lola?
Both.
they
were both barking tonight.
Good contributors to the show.
There we go. Gabby with you, folks. Thank you for everything.
And happy birthday to Linda.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good night.
I'll tell her.
And that's the end of the show, and we thank everybody for joining us, and we wish you the very best. And join us right here again next week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday night. Friday night with George Dixon. So have a pleasant evening.